Hello, welcome back to Switching Hats, the careers podcast for researchers who are keen to look beyond the classical academic pathway for their career. Today with me, Linus Bielinski.
And me, Chiara Toschi. After we heard in our last episode, Alexa Frost, about her experience of becoming an archivist at the Blenheim Palace after having done a PhD in classics, today we switch gears, again with a guest having a STEM background.
Yes, today we talk to Alexander Ivanov, who did his PhD in neuroscience at Oxford University and then joined Faculty AI as a data scientist. Welcome, Alex. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, really happy to be here.
Yeah, let's kick off with our usual question on your background. So can you tell us a little bit about your academic research background during your PhD and how you then got to become a data scientist afterwards?
Yeah, so my PhD was in University of Oxford with Professor Kerry Walker and Professor Andrew King. And I was studying the auditory system, specifically looking at how brains represent auditory information, how they may encode auditory information, and what kind of processing and adaptation may happen along the way while they're processing the information, and how we can model this using computer code to make sure that we really understand what's like going on underneath. Yeah.
And then after this research experience, can you remember the point where you decided to make the change to a non-academic research path?
This was maybe in the late stages of my PhD or just after my PhD, where I was kind of considering my next steps. And I guess similar to many people, the option is either to do a postdoc or to look for something outside of academia. And I was, in all honesty, considering a postdoc, maybe like a computational neuroscience lab where I can continue modeling the brain. But I think for me, it was maybe the right time to make the move because I was looking for a faster paced environment where maybe things are a bit more dynamic, where, I could do a bigger variety of things and not necessarily work on a single project for 2, 3 or even more years. So yeah, that was probably about the time, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. We'll talk a little bit about if you found that environment of faster pace and a different type of work, but...
I guess sort of like, how did you then land on your job in Faculty AI? How did you hear about the company? And what kind of experiences did you have before applying to it?
Yeah, so the way that I heard about it is through a friend of mine from Oxford, who was also thinking of applying to the program, and she told me about it. And before actually joining the faculty program, I did another one called Science to Data Science, which is quite similar but much shorter. And I wanted to have enough time to really think carefully what I want to do next. So that's why I actually end up doing like two of those sort of conversion programs. But yeah, so word of mouth, and I took a short gap after my PhD, like a few months. Then I did this first program, and then I joined the faculty one, yeah.
What skills, I mean, do you think, were helpful in landing you a job, you know, for example, I mean, or first landing you the internship, and then from that, you know, landing you the job in faculty? Do you think that, you know, in order to enter into these internship programs, you already need to be very good at coding? Or do you think that there is space for people that maybe did a little bit of programming, but not, you know, they're not really, you know, mathematical people? Like, what's the variety, I guess, of... You know, data science you can do depending on the mathematical skills that you have.
Yeah, that's a good question. So data scientists could mean different things in different industries and like companies. It could be, for example, mostly doing PowerPoint presentations and talking to clients and maybe doing a little bit of analysis like linear regression in Excel. Or it could be quite sophisticated modeling where one really gets into the nitty-gritty of modeling or like, let's say, parameter hyper-tuning. So it really depends on like the job. But for faculty specifically, and based on my, like, let's say, so far limited observation from talking to other people as well, I think generally some coding experience is desirable. It doesn't necessarily have to be like Python or a specific language. Like any language is like a good starting point. And you can definitely transition into like the industry standard, which very often happens to be Python, but in some places people use R as well. And as long as you have some experience with problem solving, some like coding ability, I think it's completely possible to transition. And even with regards to the roles, let's say in like our company, we have people spanning from machine learning engineers to data scientists to what we call commercial people, associates. And depending on the person's preference, they could be more heavy on the software side and coding or more on the soft skills and commercial side.
You just mentioned that there's quite a variety of roles and positions within your company and maybe the sector as a whole. So would you suggest there's any specific subject that primes you the best for a career in data science? Like you came from neuroscientific background, or is this very broad as well, that anyone who had to do with coding and data analysis is well positioned to go into that sector?
I think obviously like the STEM subjects put you naturally at an advantage because you already have some mathematical skills, coding skills, problem solving skills. But even within our company, we have data scientists who come from history or linguistics, modern languages. So I think it's quite flexible. And as long as a person is willing to put in the effort to learn and is consistent, I think they can definitely fill in any gaps that they have. And within our fellowship program, that maybe we can talk about later in more detail, we actually try to help fill some of those gaps so that when people start, they already have some of the necessary skills.
So yeah, I think this leads nicely to, I guess, two of my other questions. One is, how much do you think you can train on the job? Like how much, you know, if you, obviously, I mean, as a PhD, that is your kind of training part, you're sort of in a way getting a scholarship for you to also get trained. I mean, how much training, you know, usually happens, I guess, in industry and in particular, maybe in your company. And I guess the second question, yeah, if you also want to go a little bit deeper into the internship program, that would be nice. Thanks.
Yeah. So for the first question, it's definitely possible to learn on the job. And I would say this is probably one of the most transferable skills for PhD students going into data science is the ability to ingest new information, process new information, and being able to figure out what's important and what not, and what's not important. And I would say quite often during my PhD, I had to troubleshoot, I have to learn new skills. So that was definitely quite helpful on the job as well. So it wouldn't be uncommon if I'm working on a project to have to upskill in a certain area. And specifically within our company, we have also some learning initiatives. Like every Friday, we have 2 or 3 hours to learn new skills where we are not required to work on a client project. It's called Drop Everything and Learn DEAL, where people can read papers, upskill. We also have some internal courses. So yeah, it's definitely possible to learn on like the job, and it's not required that you're expert in like everything. With regards to the internship, the internship is around 8 weeks. There is 2 weeks of intense training where one would learn things like Python coding skills, version control, for example, Git, GitLab, GitHub, that kind of stuff. Something maybe about machine learning modeling, but also more soft skills like presentation, stakeholder management, which are maybe things that people in academia don't necessarily have a lot of experience with. And then we will have a 6-week project where you work with a real company, with a real client, where you get experience. Because I would say one of the main barriers for people coming from academia is getting the first job, because you don't have experience, therefore people don't hire you. People don't hire you, therefore you don't have experience. So anything to kind of break this vicious loop is very like helpful. And I think faculty does really well to get you some kind of real world experience that you can put on your CV and can bootstrap your career search, basically.
And would you say, you mentioned a bit about the importance of these kind of development programs and internships. There's probably a wide variety of these on offer, right? Or do you recommend specific ones like Faculty AI?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would recommend the one that's managed by my company. I think it's quite good because, one, you cover a lot of skills and there is like good upskilling before you start the actual project. Two, you get the real world experience. I think it's also very nice and stimulating because you meet like other people as well that are on like the program. You network a lot, which is like extremely valuable. But of course there are, and most importantly, you like get paid as well, because for many of the internships, you actually have to pay. So I think that's a big bonus that you get to live in London, you get a little stipend, and I think that's quite helpful. But in terms of other ones, yeah, they definitely do exist. So as I mentioned earlier, before faculty, I did something called Science to Data Science, which I think is also quite good and I would recommend. I'm pretty sure that other ones exist as well. Yeah, but yeah, internship, it's definitely a good way to kind of get a head start. I would also say maybe finally that some of the companies themselves offer internship programs. So, for example, Google DeepMind or even like, you know, other retail companies, like a lot of companies will offer some sort of data science internship. Yeah, definitely.
And in general, it sounds like a lot of people go the internship via the internship route. Or do you know now of colleagues that went directly from academia to a full-time position?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I definitely know of some people who went directly, and I think it's also possible. It's just a little bit easier to kind of have this ramp that allows you, which is the internship, that allows you to kind of do it in like a more gradual way. But especially for smaller startups where they're always looking for like people, it can be possible to kind of get a job immediately. And yeah, like I wouldn't limit myself only to internships, but yeah, it's just a nice segue.
Yeah, so always good to keep eyes open. There are always opportunities. So let's talk a little bit about what it's like on the job. So can you describe a bit of a typical day in your job or a typical week, if that exists at all?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, there will be quite a lot of variety, but there are some commonalities. So I think probably the main difference with academia is that the projects tend to be shorter in terms of the time scale. So a typical project will be maybe anywhere between, like, let's say 8 to 10 weeks to maybe a few months. But definitely, it's quite rare to be on a project for, let's say, 2 or 3 years, which would be the case in academia. So very often in like the morning when one works on like a project, one will have like a daily meeting, also known as like Scrum, which is according to the Agile sort of methodology, which simply means that we develop in a way that we make sure that everybody is doing well, that everybody knows what they're working on, and there are no blockers. So the way to think about them is like very kind of mini lab meetings for people coming from academia, where for somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes, people say what they worked on the previous day, what they plan to work on today, and whether they found any blockers. And they might get some advice or kind of help in order to proceed with the work. So this would be in like the morning. Then there may be some other meetings with colleagues. So for example, there could be like a code review meeting where we go over code that we are writing and we are kind of maybe giving each other feedback. That'll be another use of the time. Then I guess anywhere between 2 to 4, maybe sometimes more hours, like one could kind of code and, you know, develop code for the project. And it will be also typical maybe to sometimes have to do like a presentation, or like if it's a longer project, maybe also do some report writing depending on the particular stage. So it will be quite varied, really. Yeah. And of course, if you're in the office, you can meet with your colleagues, maybe play some pool, maybe have a drink after work. So yeah, like I would say it's quite varied. Yeah.
What is like a typical project? What is a project in your company? Like what kind of work could you be doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. It could be quite varied. So the current project that I'm working on is with the Department for Education, and we are working on building a content store, meaning that we can put educational content for easy to access way for developers, such that they could build apps and other enabling technology for teachers and students. So that is my current project. But I have done more research flavor projects where, for example, we were exploring how LLMs work and whether whether when they give us a certain answer, we can find the original data where they took the answer from, how are they making these decisions. So it was very research like this project with DSTL. There will be some more delivery focused projects where we'll be building a specific product for a client that they'll be actually using with their customers. So yeah, I would say there is quite a big variety, and there isn't necessarily like a typical project that one works on. But yeah, roughly.
How much choice, I guess, do you have in terms of which project you want to do? Like if you're an employee, you know, and your boss comes and be like, oh, this is the project that you'll be working on, can you sort of be like, no, actually, I'd rather do this? Or do you think that usually you sort of go with whatever kind of needs to be done?
Yeah, so maybe this is a common concern that people have when they leave academia, that they will lose completely their freedom and they will kind of work for some soulless corporation, like telling them what to do. But I would say it's not really like that. And we do have a lot of choice in our project selection. So for example, if for whatever reasons you have ethical like considerations and objections, you can be removed from like the project at any time, at least in our company. You have a manager who is kind of your direct manager, is like the person who is responsible for your development, for your career progression within the company. So you can communicate to him your like likes and dislikes, what kind of things that you want to develop on. You have developmental goals, and all of these things are taken into account when you're assigned to a project. And usually there is also like good visibility of upcoming projects. So you don't have complete freedom to choose your project, but you can definitely influence the process quite a lot and work on project that you're more likely to be interested in and to kind of find fulfilling. Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the projects you worked on were quite research heavy versus others were less so. So do you still feel like you're a researcher, or like it's a bit similar identity to when you were an academic researcher? Or has it changed quite a lot since you moved into this different sector?
Yeah. So obviously there will be some differences, but I think there is also some surprising similarities. So during my PhD, I do had to troubleshoot very often some piece of code that like wouldn't work. I would have to work with limited information or like something that is very new and figure out like how I can actually apply this to my own case. And a lot of these elements I have to do on my current job as well. For example, when I'm exploring like a new package that I have to apply to my job, or learning about a new topic that I don't necessarily know a lot about. So I would say there will be definitely some similarities with research and with the kind of things that I was doing in like research. But obviously, maybe the main difference would be the time scale. Like things have to happen a lot faster in a lot more dynamic fashion. And I would say maybe the level of collaboration is potentially higher in terms of talking to people, in like terms of working on different things. That's not to say that in academia there's no collaboration. But yeah, I would say these are probably the main similarities and main differences.
In terms of like suggesting projects, like I guess I don't know enough about how the consultancies or the world works, but sometimes you could also pitch a project to like a client, right? Or is it usually that the client, you know, comes to your company and says, oh, we need this to be done, and then you sort of deliver it in however way you feel, you know, more appropriate? Or can you also sometimes sort of suggest something that would be interesting or useful, and then you can sort of see if anyone is willing to kind of, you know, fund it? Or, you know, can it be a little bit more like research that you're like applying for, you know, grants in a way? Or is it more like, you know, client driven?
So usually what will happen is, at least let's say for government projects that we're working on, there'll be an open bid that is released, that like a tender where anybody can propose a solution. And of course, there is some parameters there that have to be satisfied, but there will be also quite a lot of freedom in terms of what can be proposed. And we as data scientists, part of our work is to do business development, which essentially means writing some of these proposals, refining these proposals, and kind of helping the company when submitting those proposals. So you could have an input at this stage. It's also worth mentioning that we have internal projects where we could developing some internal tools or like ideas where you could have quite a lot of freedom to experiment and to try things out. But yeah, of course, for some projects, yeah, it's fairly well defined and you have to just execute it. So it would, to some extent, yeah, like depend on like the project. But I would say that, yeah, definitely for some of them, at least you can have an input and you can influence how they're kind of scoped and carried out.
Mm. So you mentioned you have internal development as well, and not only client-driven projects. Does this mean there is never a downtime where there's little to do? And I know in other consultancies, sometimes people are outside of projects and are waiting for the next one and can do very much personal development or basically have much more freedom than in high-stress times. Does this mean this doesn't really exist for you? Is there always work to do, or do you have ups and downs in terms of workload?
Yeah. I think definitely, like very often, one will be on like a project. But there is also definitely times where you're not on a project. And as you say, you could use this time for personal development, which can ultimately also be helpful for like the company. So I can give an example. Let's say in May, it was like a bit more quiet period. So I took this time to kind of prepare and get a certification for one of the cloud providers, Amazon Web Services. So I got a machine learning certification in AWS. And this was kind of good for me because I learned some new skills. I can put it on my CV. but it's also good for the company because it deepens the partnership between the company and the cloud provider. So for some other people, you know, they could like work on other skills, or we could maybe build some internal tools that could be used within the company, but we don't necessarily sell to the client. And yeah, those periods would generally be a little bit more quiet. You could also maybe do other things like help with interviewing people, or like coming back to the fellowship that we run, like one could also teach on the fellowship and help like the next generation of scientists who want to transition into industry. So yeah, there's definitely things to do, but it's not always very high stress. I would say no.
And it definitely sounds like a very collaborative spirit that within the company, within your daily work, and also helping other scientists making the transition. So maybe my last question would be, was there anything that was really surprising after you left academia and went into this career, or was most quite expected?
Yeah, obviously, one doesn't know everything when you embark on like a new journey. So there was definitely some things that I necessarily didn't know. So obviously, like the coding skills, problem solving, maybe like math background, that was quite helpful, and I kind of knew that. But I was actually surprised how much of the skills were transferable from the soft skills as well. So for example, when you do a PhD, you manage like quite a big project with a lot of what would be called industry stakeholders, your PI, collaborators. So like we do have, and obviously we present our work very often, we talk about our work. So we actually have a lot of skills already that are highly sought after in industry. So I think, yeah, that was definitely something that I didn't expect. And I would say I maybe had the conception that work-life balance could be a little bit better in industry, but I was actually very pleasantly surprised like how like good it was, and how kind of people respect your time. If they need you to do something after 5 p.m., they're very apologetic about it. People are very conscious that, you know, you shouldn't be working on like the weekend, monitoring your workload. Obviously, that would depend from company to company and between different industries. But yeah, I would definitely say that that was probably one of the biggest kind of surprises and kind of biggest kind of pluses that I found so far. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess I have two sort of final questions. I guess one would be sort of, what would be your advice to someone who's considering, you know, transitioning to data science? And sort of linked to this, you know, what should someone like to do in order to thrive in the data science field? I don't know if that's kind of clear. As in, like, if I love methods and programming, would that be a good career for me? Or, you know, what are the things that you think make someone thrive in this field and in this job?
I would say, yeah, I think it's a good question. I would say definitely if you enjoy a more fast-paced environment, an environment where like the application of what you're doing and kind of the more immediate results, the impact is important to you, this might suit you better, because obviously academia is extremely important, and many of the kind of sort of developments we see like come from academia after like many years. But I would say in industry, there is much more immediate impact. Things are a lot more kind of faster paced. So that would be kind of one thing. Then in like terms of, terms of what one should look for or what one's interests are, I think it again really depends on the industry and on the company. I think it's not possible to make like a blanket statement for all data science. So for example, a startup would be a lot more fast paced and you would probably do a lot more things like a just beginning startup versus a big established company that has a lot of procedures, a lot of kind of organizational like things in place. So yeah, I guess it will also quite depend on the industry and on the specific company that you like join.
And in terms, I guess, of advice to anyone wanting to kind of transition, yeah, is there something, I mean, I guess we've talked about internships. Is there something else that you think like, oh, you know, if you do this, that's definitely going to give you like an edge or like, a good head start?
Yeah, obviously, internships are quite useful. Another thing that maybe people already know about is online courses, for example, in like Coursera, edX, like all these online platforms where they can upskill in specific things that they might miss. So, for example, Python or some coding skills. But I would say also maybe a surprising one is, especially coming from academia, is using your network and trying to find people maybe who did a similar journey to you that you're considering. which can not only help you with contacts in terms of getting the job, but also understanding more about what the job is actually like. Would you enjoy working in this company? There is also places like Glassdoor where one could actually read review from current and former employees from different companies and try to understand whether it would be a good match for them. And then maybe finally, there is this website called Otta.com where one could kind of search for specific jobs based on their interest, like specifically within data science. But yeah, I would say those would be like a good starting points.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning, I guess, the network bit, because this is exactly why we're doing this. So yeah, you're going to receive a lot of emails and messages from people that are interested in joining faculty. If you could please, you know, give back to the community.
That seems to be the spirit.
Yeah, we are not sharing your email. Yeah, so thank you so much for joining us and sharing your journey, you know, with us as a former researcher, now data scientist.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Alex. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. And yeah, hope to get those emails and help more people transition.